Good morning. Thank you for being here. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to join us. It is Friday, June 14th, and the meeting is being webcast and recorded, so all participants, please speak clearly. Members of the public who wish to observe or to address the board may join the meeting at the notice physical location or may use the Zoom application to address the board from a remote location. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available at www.cal-span.org. In addition, we're receiving presentations and public comment through a Zoom meeting platform. If you intend to present or comment or think you might be interested in commenting, you should already be in the Zoom meeting room using the meeting ID and password you received from the clerk. If you've not already received the meeting ID and password, you can go to our website at www.waterboards.ca.gov/North Coast. Click on the April 4th, 2024 board meeting button and follow the instructions to complete a virtual speaker card. You will then receive an email from the clerk with the Zoom login information. For anyone here in the meeting room that wishes to address the board, please complete a speaker card available on the tables outside the boardroom and give it to the clerk. For those in the Zoom meeting, your camera will be turned off and you will be on mute until it is your turn to speak. The clerk will unmute you when it is your turn to address the board, and you can turn your camera on. We will call each commenter by name and then unmute each commenter. I would also like to ask those who have provided a contact name to please state your name for the record before you speak. There will be a 5-minute time limit for each commenter. During public testimony, you will see a timer on the screen. For those calling in by phone, we will run the timer and let you know when you have 30 seconds left and when your time is up. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are called upon during public comment. When you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, please turn your camera off and you will be placed on mute. You can remain in the Zoom meeting until the completion of your item, and then you may choose to exit the meeting or continue. With that, we move on to the agenda, and we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance. If you'd please stand and join me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Okay. With that, we will have a roll call. We'll begin with Jake McKenzie on my right.
Jake McKenzie, resident of Rohnert Park, the southernmost part of this region, is present and correct today.
Alex Hart, resident of Little Shasta, Siskiyou County, California.
Greg Giusti, Ukiah. Brian Sundberg, McKinleyville.
Hector Bedoya from Healdsburg. Valerie, if you would introduce staff.
Good morning, Chair Bedoya and members of the board. I'm Valerie Quinto, Executive Officer. To my far left is Bailey Toff Dupuis, counsel to the board. To my immediate left is Nathan Jacobson, also counsel to the board. To my immediate right is Claudia Villacorta, Assistant Executive Officer. And to her right is Joshua Curtis, Assistant Executive Officer. Across from me is Deidre Wilkerson, Executive Assistant, and the rest of staff will introduce themselves as their items come up. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, time for public forum. Time will be reserved for the general public to address the board on any matter within the board's jurisdiction, excluding those items on the agenda. The board chair may limit the public forum to 30 minutes initially and continue any remaining appearances beyond the 30 minutes at the end of the regularly scheduled business of the day. The board chair requests that each person addressing the board limit their presentation to 5 minutes. Deidre, would you
call? Ken Richter, you can come forward.
Good morning. First, I'd like to thank the board and staff for giving me the opportunity today. Public speaking isn't really my thing, so bear with me. So I prepared a little bit of a statement here that I wrote up on Wednesday, and then I'll follow up because there's been some developments since Wednesday on this topic. My name is Ken Richter. My property and home are in McDowell Valley, where I've resided for the past 30 years. The first 25 of those years were nothing short of perfect. The opportunity to raise my two children with my wife in the heart of wine country was a blessing, and our privilege of having land to raise animals and enjoy the outdoors was always the best part of our home. 5 years ago, however, the landscape of McDowell Valley was changed when Vintage Wine Estates decided to move in next door and build Ray Station facility. They built a monstrosity of a production site, disregarding that the property was zoned ag with rangeland and could not uphold such a structure, all the while bragging about it publicly. They knew that they could take advantage of Mendocino County's smaller community and looser guidelines, and forged on with no consideration of the community or environment. Mind you, there are plenty of locations in our county for commercial and industrial developments that could have better suited their needs. We did our due diligence and made our concerns heard to all the proper agencies: air quality management, Mendocino Building Department, and Mendocino County's Environmental Health. Every one of these agents disregarded us and refused to help. For you to understand me and why I'm here today, I'm not the guy who buys land next to an airport and then complains about the planes. However, if you put one in my backyard after I carefully researched the area to ensure that I was not possible to do so, I will not be sitting quietly. We have had to accept the obstruction of views, the noise, the light pollution. However, they're clearly failing wastewater ponds, and the constant stench of sewage in our home is something that we cannot stand anymore. It is so strong that we feel nauseous, and if we are outside for too long, I don't even want to think about the ramifications of our health breathing it in. The North Coast Regional Water Board has cited them on multiple violations and are imposing fines. Our family, as well as surrounding neighbors, have 5 years of text messages, emails, and correspondence with public agencies and VWE management regarding the smell, but no solution has been brought forward. They cannot maintain their wastewater system. It is too small to facilitate the production site they have built, and they have pumped enormous amounts of wastewater into the streams, which feeds directly into the Russian River. To say the least, it's a huge mess, and it's only getting messier. VWE has continued to give no response even after a personal visit to their facility. They are retaining lawyers, I think primarily to hold off the water board. At this point, Ray Station and Vintage Wine Estates have left us with no choice but to use our voices elsewhere. They refuse to listen to the community around them and work with us to get our life back. We hope this organization can help us, but at this point, we have no faith that Vintage Wine Estates can even fix the problem at hand. They are too big of a facility to handle what they are trying to do with the resources that they have available. That's what I've prepared. So the new developments was I had a meeting with the head of operations yesterday. He didn't have much to say. He just basically heard me out and had told me that they have a plan that they're proposing to you to fix their problem. My problem with that is it has to do with their consultant that works for Heritage. Well, those are the people they've been working with for 5 years. And 5 years, we've had continuous problem. The facility is too small. They don't have any land left available. The ribs have failed. They put the ribs in directly over their well, their main well on the property. I mean, some of this stuff is just ridiculous. I woke up in the middle of the night recently, and our house just stenched inside the house. I was nauseous. I got up. I had vertigo. I had to close all the windows and doors in our house and revert to using the air conditioner, which we've been having to do for the last 2 months. One of the nicest things about living there was that we could open up the doors and windows because we have the nice cool evenings and cool off the house. And now we can't do that anymore. You really take fresh air is something that I think everybody's entitled to. And when somebody takes it away from you, it's just not right. So I'm going to give you one story and then I'll be done with this. Mother's Day. We have built a really nice outdoor area with a swimming pool and an outdoor bar. And it's always been the gathering place because we live out in the country for all our families and friends. And we do all the big events usually at our place. My mom's 84 years old and she looked over at me and said, "I can't do this. I'm sorry, honey, but the stench is too bad. I can't eat under these conditions." And we had to pack everybody up and leave our property on Mother's Day. This is just completely wrong. I'm hoping that the board will consider every means possible to try to resolve this problem. Like we said, we've had no help from the county agencies at all. And I hope that you would also consider a cease and desist order if that's what it takes. But they have a plan, but we're afraid that their plan is just going to fail, just like it has over the past 5 years. We get a month where there's no smell, and then it's back. Then we're back contacting them, and it's there for 3 months. And then they get some bugs, or they fix an aerator, or whatever it is. I don't think they have this under control at all. So thank you for your time today, for hearing me out.
Thank you for bringing up the topic. We've heard about it.
I know you're aware of it. I just feel good about coming down and talking to you directly about it. And the other thing I would like to say is I think that this would be a bigger issue. There's four residents there. If there was 20 residents to the east of this, up in that valley, there's not. It's really rural, and they're bullying us because there's only four of us. So, you know, it's hard to have your voices heard when there's so few voices. But thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Deidre, anybody else?
Sean?
Good morning, Chair and board members. Sean White. I'm just here to give you an update on my saga. I've been here, I think this is my third time now, talking about my endangered species lawsuit against the Army Corps for turbidity from Lake Mendocino. the quick summary, I won. And I won in summary judgment. And it's really important to understand what that means. That means there were essentially no disputable facts to warrant a trial. As dire as my data was, showing essentially 100% mortality of Chinook and steelhead reds below the dam, their data showed effectively the same thing. Some notable statistics from their own data, once it was finally revealed, was that the turbidity levels from Lake Mendocino were lethal 51 to 70% of the time. And that's not my data. That is from the Army Corps of Engineers. And that that turbidity persisted from Lake Mendocino 44 miles downstream. Those are crazy numbers. And quite fortunately for us, the judge agreed. On top of that, the Army Corps had not completed any of its mandatory non-discretionary reasonable and prudent measures in RPM 4, and they had also allowed the BO to lapse. And as a result, they were found guilty of unauthorized take under the Endangered Species Act for both Section 7 and Section 9 of the ESA. So that part of things is done. And really, it's now, where do we go from here, and what would I like to see from this agency? And really what I'm looking for is the kind of regulatory parity that I think is needed to bring this discharger into compliance just like any other discharger. And that would really be to hold them to the same turbidity standards that you hold everybody else to. I know they've done a pretty good job of convincing people that that's effectively impossible because their facility is out of date. And I think that's likely true. But like any other discharger, owning and operating out-of-date, non-compliant facilities isn't really an excuse for violating water quality standards. It means you need to modernize and update your facilities, just like we have done for our wastewater plant, just like Santa Rosa has done, and just like basically everyone you issue permits is also required to do. And the final step of our case will happen in August. And if they haven't completed a new biological opinion, which I think they may, because I know they're working furiously to do it to avoid losing again, I will ask that they're essentially just held to the same standard as everyone else. And if that doesn't happen, if they do complete it, I would look for you to hold them to that standard. And I think there are a number of ways that can happen. But before we talk about that, I really want you to get a handle of the scale of why I think you should be involved. You're in the middle of a large enforcement action against Mark West Corey right now. And I don't dispute the merits of that violation, but it's also important to understand that is literally just a drop in the bucket compared to what's happening in Ukiah. I did some math because that's what I do. I'm a water math person for my career. And the amount of discharge that happened for the entire Mark West Corey discharge happens every day at Lake Mendocino between 8 and 200 times a day. And I think it's crazy to pursue some of these other things that also need to be pursued while this thing just kind of flies under the radar, unchecked, killing fish for 44 freaking miles. That's a long ways. And then again, that's not even my data. So how do we get there? I think there are a number of avenues to reach this regulatory parity. I was very happy to hear that you folks have initiated some investigative orders, and I think that is fantastic. But I really think the BO and your entity weighing in on the BO is the real way to get this thing codified. They didn't comply with the BO last time, but I'm pretty confident they're going to comply with it this time. But to be totally blunt, the regulatory agencies that were involved with the BO failed to hold their feet to the fire, and basically allowed them to not comply. And I would hope that this agency doesn't do the same thing. So you've got your investigative orders. You've got the biological opinion. And then also, Jared Huffman recently secured some money to revitalize the feasibility study for raising the dam at Lake Mendocino as well. That is also going to be a public process. And I would really like everyone to look at that feasibility study. It's not really as a raising of the dam anymore, but really a modernization of Lake Mendocino. I've said this in my case from the beginning, and I'll say it again today. I don't think this discharge is anybody's nefarious plan or malfeasance or anything else other than this is a really old facility. That's a really old design. And that's why it probably won't be able to comply with your standards. It has one outlet on the very bottom of the reservoir, and that's just not where the good water lives. So I think to get this to be a modern compliant facility, this feasibility study and the funding that could follow is really probably our best opportunity to get this facility up to date and actually comply with the ESA as well as your discharge requirements. And with that, happy to take any questions.
First of all, thank you for your presentation. Congratulations. Well-deserved. And for the sake of the fish and their future, I thank you for your work. And yes, we are involved. And I'll just stop there.
Thank you. Sean, it's amazing what you did. And thank you. You at least knocked Goliath to its knees and maybe takes a little bit more push. I know that staff is very willing to work with you, and I encourage you to keep up your dialogue to ensure that staff explore every possible option that this board can consider in the future. You can articulate the problem better than anyone that I've ever heard, and so I admire your style, I admire your delivery. I know you're not going to give up, but work. I just encourage you to continue to work with staff and give this board some options that we can move this thing along. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And while I'm up here, I want to say, you know, I was the goofball that started this whole journey, but if it wasn't for my small team of equally motivated and intelligent humans, including Mr. Clampt and my attorney, Phil Williams, we would not have been successful. But yes, thank you. And you'll continue to see me here until I think it's underway for resolution. Thank you for your time.
Sean, I just want to thank you. I reiterate the work you're doing and holding all agencies' feet to the fire. They all need to follow whatever the regulation is, be it ESA or water quality, and just commend your work. And I was curious, can you provide the case number? Or is that something you can provide us?
I certainly can. Yeah. I don't have that committed to memory, but I'm happy to send the final judgment to anyone that would like it. So Deidre, I'll send it to her and then she can distribute it around.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And in addition, Board Member Hart, we have a copy of that decision and can provide it to all board members.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Yes, Tom is joining us via Zoom. Tom, can you unmute and state your name and make sure we can hear you, we can see you. Thank you.
Hi, can you hear me all right?
Yes.
My name is Tom Stokely. I'm a consultant with Save California Salmon, and I'm here to talk to you about threats to the Trinity River and meeting cold water requirements, temperature requirements for the Trinity River. This is not agenda item 7. This is something related but different. As you may be aware, the State Water Resources Control Board is in the midst of updating the Bay Delta Plan. They're in phase 2 right now, which is the Sacramento River and its tributaries. And I gave a presentation to the State Board on the voluntary agreements on April 24th, along with an attorney named Leland Marston. And what I talked about in that presentation, and I'm happy to give it to you or some version thereof at some future board meeting, is that these so-called voluntary agreements, which do not include, to the best of my knowledge, any parties within the Trinity River Basin, these voluntary agreements will draw down storage in Trinity Lake, which will impact the cold water pool and the ability to meet temperature requirements in the Trinity River downstream. The Trinity River was once described to me as the cold water tap, with the Klamath River as the hot water tap for the Klamath Basin. And as we all know, there's a huge effort underfoot to remove the dams on the Klamath River and restore the fisheries there. Well, the Trinity River is the largest tributary of the Klamath River, and it's key to success of restoring the Klamath River. You may or may not be aware that a 2017 record of decision by the Bureau of Reclamation allowed the use of cold, clean Trinity River water to alleviate adverse conditions in the lower Klamath River, similar to what occurred in 2002 when we had the massive fish kill on the lower Klamath River. And if that cold water pool on the Trinity River is depleted during some future drought, there will not be the ability to release that cold water from the Trinity River to prevent disease and death of migrating adult salmon in the lower Klamath River. Since 2003, something like 335,000 acre feet of Trinity River water has been released to alleviate conditions in the lower Klamath River for spawning adult salmon, migrating adult salmon. So I would encourage you to look into this. It's of great concern. The bottom line is that whenever there's a so-called deal in the Central Valley, it usually includes using additional Trinity River water, whether it's the American River Forum, the voluntary agreements, whatever it may be, the San Joaquin Valley Blueprint. They all rely on additional Trinity River diversions, which will draw down the cold water pool and make it impossible to meet temperature requirements. We had in 1977, during the two-year drought, Trinity Lake was essentially completely depleted of cold water. And I do have copies of reports from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife at the Trinity River Hatchery that talked about the massive mortality of fish there. This is not an if kind of scenario. It's a when kind of scenario. And at some point in the future, when we have a multi-year drought and the Bureau of Reclamation draws down Trinity Lake to dangerously low levels to meet senior water contracts in the Central Valley because they've over-allocated the supply there, particularly during drought, we're going to have a real problem for both the Trinity and the Klamath River. So I offer to you to give a presentation in the future about threats to the Trinity River and the ability to meet temperature requirements there. One final note I wanted to add is that there's been a lot of concern about Sites Reservoir and the possibility that sites may be filled with Trinity River water. And I did work closely with Humboldt County to get the Sites Project Authority to agree to a term and condition that prohibits filling Sites Reservoir with Trinity River water, which should be helpful. In a prior EIS that where they analyzed operations, they were taking Trinity River water early in the year in a manner that would negatively impact temperature conditions on the Trinity River. So please pay attention to this stuff. I know you care. I'm not as sure that the state board cares. So I offer my services, and I'll talk to you on the next agenda item. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. And perhaps you can work with our staff to schedule a presentation to the board in the future.
That would be great. Thank you very much.
Sir, I just have a question, and excuse my ignorance of the geographic layout out there, but does Trinity Lake drop into Lewiston Lake? Are they connected? And is Lewiston Lake the final gatekeeper that opens water to the Sacramento system?
Yes, that's correct. Most of these major water projects have a large storage reservoir upstream and then a regulation reservoir downstream. Lewiston Reservoir is that regulation reservoir, and water can either be released to the Clear Creek Tunnel to Whiskey Town and the Sacramento River, or it can be released down the Trinity River. And when I give a presentation, I've got some nice graphics that show you how it works. It's a little bit complicated. And the strange thing is that because Lewiston Reservoir heats up, if you don't run a lot of water through it, in order to keep the Trinity River cold, you have to actually export water to the Sacramento River in the summertime.
Would there be a Whiskey Town Reservoir if that diversion was not occurring?
No, there would not. Whiskey Town is largely Trinity River water.
All right, thank you for that explanation.
Thank you.
That's it for public forum.
Okay, then we move on to item number 7. Resolution to adopt final staff report for the 2023 triennial review of water quality control plan for the North Coast region and planning program work plan for fiscal year 2024 through 2027. This is the time and place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adoption of Resolution R1-2024-0027, approving the 2023 Triennial Review of the Water Quality Control Plan for the North Coast Region and Planning Program Work Plan for fiscal years 2024 through 2027. This item has been properly noticed. We will begin with a staff presentation. After the staff presentation, interested persons will have 5 minutes each to provide oral comments, followed by board discussion.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you for your time today. My name is Michelle Fuller. I'm an environmental scientist in the planning unit, and I will be presenting the 2023 triennial review for your consideration. Do I have to point this? Oh, all right. I will start the presentation with some of how triennial review works and why we do it, describe our triennial review outreach and engagement, and provide an overview of the details of our process, from the draft recommendations to revisions that were made to the final draft. I will highlight things that are new or different this year in this triennial review compared to the previous ones, and review just a couple of the project proposals recommended for the work plan. We have a legal requirement to conduct triennial review described in both the Porter Cologne Water Quality Act and Clean Water Act. We do this to keep pace with changes in regulation, new technologies, policies, and physical changes in the region, to identify portions of the basin plan in need of modification, to adopt standards as appropriate, and to provide a formal process for interested parties to provide input to the Regional Water Board work plan for basin planning. As a result of the triennial review, we should have an understanding of needed modifications to the basin plan, a proposed work plan for the planning unit for the next 3 fiscal years, and a resolution of the board approving this triennial review and the proposed work plan. The triennial review is focused on the sufficiency of our basin plan, and therefore the staff report only describes projects that would result in a basin plan amendment. Monitoring requests, changes to water rights orders, and requests related to other projects outside of the planning unit are not a part of triennial review. During triennial review, staff referred these issues and requests to the appropriate programs and staff. The last triennial review was completed in 2018, with projects categorized into high, medium, or low priority for staffing. There were 12 high priority projects listed on the work plan, some without staff allocations. This slide is one of 2 containing the list of high priority projects and their status as we started the 2023 triennial review. All of the projects on this slide are recommended for the currently proposed work plan. This slide contains the rest of the high priority projects from 2018 and their status as we started the 2023 triennial review. The last line is a reference to the 11 projects that were ranked medium or low priority in the 2018 triennial review. These projects could have been proposed several triennial reviews ago and had been included in each subsequent triennial review as a medium or low priority project. For the 2023 triennial review, staff are moving away from this high, medium, low ranking and focusing on describing each currently proposed project and whether it is recommended for the current work plan or further consideration in a subsequent triennial review. Staff distributed the list of medium and low priority projects internally to all staff and externally through the draft triennial review staff report public comment process. Neither staff nor members of the public highlighted these as current priorities, so they will be removed. Any of these projects can come back as new proposals if requested. The overall process for triennial review can be categorized into four phases. We start with the internal review of the basin plan with Regional Water Board staff, giving staff presentations and emailing to check in with implementation and enforcement staff about changes needed to the basin plan or proposals for the planning unit work plan. The formal proposal solicitation period included a public call for proposals from internal and external partners. I will discuss outreach in more detail coming up, including the use of an online form for proposal solicitation. Here I want to highlight this as the start of public engagement for triennial review in March of 2023. Once the proposals were organized and prioritized, a draft staff report and draft planning program work plan were published on our website for a 45-day public comment period in September and October of 2023. Regional Water Board staff worked to respond to comments, both in the response to comments document and in revisions to the staff report and work plan. Here I want to share our outreach and engagement process. The proposal solicitation phase formally started our public engagement in March 2023 with our new online form I will present in the next slide. The Basin Planning email subscription list was used to make interested parties aware of the proposal solicitation, public comment period, and notice of public hearing. The triennial review website is updated with links to draft and final documents and important dates. The State Water Board's Office of Public Participation maintains a list of tribal contacts, and staff also reached out to the Native American Heritage Commission for their list of tribal contacts in the North Coast region. We tried to contact all tribes on those lists and received confirmation from some tribal staff of their interest in following the triennial review process and were contacted by other tribal staff to discuss specific projects or proposals. As a result of this outreach, we were invited to present about triennial review at some recurring meetings of tribal work groups, the Mendocino, Lake, and Sonoma Tribal Environmental Programs, and the Tribal Beneficial Uses Strategic Caucus. Additionally, staff held meetings with project proponents as needed to understand the details of their requests. And the formal public comment period was held September 15th through October 30th of 2023. Throughout the proposal solicitation and associated outreach, some concerns or requests were brought to staff that would not result in a basin plan amendment. Since these were not part of triennial review, staff made referrals to the appropriate staff within the Regional Water Board to be responsive to these requests. As mentioned in the previous slide, staff created a new online Microsoft form to collect and organize project proposals for consideration during the 2023 triennial review. Outreach about the new form was conducted through the Basin Planning email subscription group, virtual meetings with Regional Water Board staff, and external meeting opportunities from the planning unit and other staff at the Regional Water Board. The proposal solicitation phase was roughly 2 months from early March to early May 2023. 53 responses were collected using the online form, including repeat requests, editorial amendment requests, and requests that would not result in a basin plan amendment. Proposals were received from Regional Water Board staff, other government agencies, tribes, nonprofit organizations, and individuals. All proposals received since the 2018 triennial review were reviewed and organized. The form responses are automatically put into a single Excel spreadsheet to ensure that none are lost. The link for the form is live on the Triennial Review webpage, as proposals can be submitted at any time and will next be reviewed for consideration in our next Triennial Review. All proposals that would result in a basin plan amendment are described in the staff report. The number of projects for the work plan far outweigh the staff resources available to work on them. This slide lists the factors Regional Water Board staff use, which are probably familiar to you from previous triennial reviews. Staff use these prioritization factors along with best professional judgment to identify projects for staffing resources in the planning program work plan. These factors are all important. You can see human health protection and protection of threatened and endangered species at the top of the list. I also want to highlight the last two bullets, the availability of necessary expertise, funding, and other resources, as this will come up at least a couple of times in this presentation. The planning unit has 5 staff personnel years to allocate to the work plan each year, so we are limited in how many projects can be staffed. And ongoing projects are routinely prioritized for work plan staffing to maintain progress and momentum on these projects that are well underway and previously prioritized. This draft work plan for fiscal years 2024 through 2027 was developed using the prioritization factors mentioned earlier, as well as internal and external engagement to understand all proposals received. The draft work plan was made available with the draft staff report for the 2023 triennial review during the 45-day public comment period during September and October 2023. This table shows the project names and status as we began the 2023 triennial review. The majority of these projects are ongoing from the previous triennial review period, some receiving staffing for the first time. All proposed projects have value, and a determination during triennial review that results in no staff resource allocation for a certain project does not imply that the project should not at some point be pursued. In the draft staff report, staff highlighted these 4 projects specifically for consideration in the next triennial review. Staff continued to seek opportunities to work with interested parties to advance water quality goals, but could not include these projects in the draft work plan due to the limited resources available within the planning unit. The public comment period for the draft triennial review documents was September 15th through October 30th, 2023. We received 12 written public comments on triennial review. Letter writers expressed concerns about water quality protection, climate change, protection of tribal water uses, and regulatory compliance. Over half the letters were specifically in support of an ONRW, and additional comments in support of ONRW have been received during preparation for this hearing. Other specific comments were received on TMDL and watershed reconciliation projects, in-stream flow objectives, implementation policies and programs, Trinity River temperature objectives, and Native American culture beneficial uses. Appendix B to the staff report contains the detailed response to comments. After consideration of the comments received, some revisions were incorporated into the final staff report and proposed work plan. These are detailed in section 2.1 of the final staff report and include the addition of 2 projects with limited staff allocations, a project considering ONRW designation for Cedar and Elder Creeks, and a project evaluating the Trinity temperature objectives in light of evolving science. ONRW received the majority of public comments, and Trinity temperature objectives received overwhelming responses to our proposal solicitation period. The Russian River Pathogen TMDL Action Plan and Coastal Pathogen Project will reappear on the work plan as their completion deadlines have been extended. And the Native American Culture Beneficial Uses Project was refined to focus on tribal-specific beneficial uses, rather than the previous project that included making designations for non-tribal subsistence fishing alongside tribal beneficial uses. These will now be separate projects. Other minor shifts in the staff allocations were made to accommodate these changes. Something new in this work plan is the addition of projects that are dependent on external resources. These projects have been refined through meetings with project proponents and input received through the public comment process. The commitments of resources to support these projects enable their inclusion in the proposed work plan, with extremely limited planning unit staff time to guide the basin plan amendment part of each project. The ONRW project will be led by the Regional Water Board's climate specialist, with project partners supporting the development of the staff report. The Trinity Temperature Objectives project will be led by the Regional Water Board's flow and riparian specialist, with project partners supporting the technical work on this project. And the Lower Eel River Exception to Seasonal Discharge Prohibition project will be led by the Regional Water Board permit writer assigned to this permit, with the City of Fortuna providing the technical assistance needed for this project. And here we have arrived at the proposed planning program work plan for fiscal years 2024 through 2027 for your consideration. You can find more details in Appendix A to the final staff report. This is an overview of the proposed planning program work plan, showing projects added since the draft work plan in bold, with asterisks identifying projects that are supported by external resources as discussed in the previous slide. The center column identifies the Regional Water Board lead staff. The status column identifies how each project would be starting this triennial review period. I would like to restate here that all projects that were proposed have value, and the triennial review process requires staff to prioritize projects for the work plan with the limited resources available. In the interest of time, rather than going through all of the projects on the work plan, I will highlight a few of the projects, starting with the ONRW project. This project was not included in the draft planning program work plan due to limited staff resources. As a result of the public comment and the commitment of external resources, we were able to add this project to the work plan. The currently proposed ONRW project is for two tributaries to the Upper South Fork Eel River, Elder Creek and Cedar Creek. This project was proposed during the project solicitation phase and received significant public comment during the formal comment period, as well as substantial additional supporting comments leading up to this board hearing. I anticipate some folks with us today will speak on this during the appropriate time. This project is connected to climate change resilience work and supported by the Regional Water Board's climate specialist. Project partners CalTrout, Trout Unlimited, and Pew Trusts have committed resources to support development of a technical report that could serve as the basis for a future Regional Water Board staff report. The final work products will be made available to the public and inform staff's subsequent work. The pace and progress related to this project will depend on these outside resources and support, and the successful completion of the currently proposed ONRW project will address concerns raised in the previous ONRW project and clarify the process for future ONRW designations. The Regional Water Board previously explored ONRW designation for the Smith River. That project did not result in a designation, but highlighted the need for a defined process and designation criteria. As staff work on developing that ONRW framework, it is a good time to note that the Smith River Water Quality Management Plan is being implemented in this watershed, including the development of a WDR to address water quality issues in the Smith River Plain. The next project I want to highlight is the Native American Culture Beneficial Uses Project. The North Coast region adopted this beneficial use in 2003 and made 28 designations of cull in that process. The North Coast cull definition broadly supports California Native American tribes' cultural uses of water, including subsistence fishing. The State Water Board adopted two tribal beneficial use definitions in 2017, a tribal tradition and culture beneficial use, and a separate tribal subsistence fishing beneficial use. Importantly, these definitions do not supersede the 2003 North Coast definition. During triennial review, three tribes submitted proposals during the solicitation phase, either for specific designations of water bodies or generally to recommend tribal beneficial uses work is prioritized, and multiple public comments referenced the importance of tribal beneficial uses. As you recall from the revisions that were made, staff have focused this Native American Culture Beneficial Uses project more specifically on tribal uses, rather than the previously described project that separated non-tribal subsistence fishing. That is now a separate project not currently prioritized for staffing. This proposed project directs staff to work with tribes in the region to reach consensus on beneficial use definitions that would best reflect tribal uses and serve their needs for water quality protection, and ultimately to amend the basin plan to expand cultural designations where appropriate. One final project to highlight is the Basin Plan Remediation Project. Taking us back to the introduction, the purpose of triennial review is to evaluate the sufficiency of our basin plan. As we continue to work on the regulatory amendments to the basin plan, staff are going to update the basin plan to ensure that it reflects the most current adopted regulations. Along with minor editorial changes to the basin plan, staff will incorporate new objectives, plans, and policies adopted by the State Water Board since the last basin plan update in 2018. These new objectives, plans, and policies are in effect once adopted by the State Water Board and are then brought into the regional basin plans as editorial amendments. Specific information about the recommended changes to the basin plan is found in Section 511 of the final staff report. Basin plan remediation will have its own public process and result in a fully up-to-date basin plan in 2025. Resolution R1-2024-27 is before you today, approving the 2023 triennial review of the Water Quality Control Plan for the North Coast Region and Planning Program Work Plan for fiscal years 2024 through 2027. Staff recommend the board adopt this resolution, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have. I anticipate a lot of discussion focused on the work plan, so I'm bringing that up as the final slide here.
Thank you for your presentation. Board members, do you have any questions?
I'd like to hear public comment.
Okay. Can we move on to public comment? Deidre?
Yes, I think we have about seven people that would like to comment. First up, Andy. I just moved you over to a panelist, so you can turn your camera on if you like, and if you could unmute to make sure we can hear you.
Yeah, thank you. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can hear and see you. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. For the record, I'm Andy Magi. I'm with the Pew Charitable Trust. Chair Bedoya and members of the board, I just want to start by thanking you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of Pew Trust today and our U.S. Conservation Program and our excitement about the outstanding National Resource Water Project that has momentum here in this triennial plan and the recommendations from staff. Pew's Conservation Program advances common sense solutions that address the impacts of a changing climate on nature and people in collaboration with policymakers, tribes, and other stakeholders. We very much appreciate the time that staff has spent working with Pew and other local organizations to develop a unique partnership and path that will allow ORNRWs to move forward in this triennial review. Pew's worked with partners in several states to develop and implement ORNRW processes and designations. And we look forward to sharing our experience on this topic as we continue working with staff and our local partners to further the designations of Elder and Cedar Creek and expand the use of ONRWs as a tool to build resilience in North Coast watersheds. Why ONRWs? Why now? Outstanding National Resource Water designations are an important and underutilized tool designed to protect waters of exceptional environmental, ecological, or recreational significance. And that is a tool given to the states. This tool is enabled through the Clean Water Act, and it provides a way for Californians to protect the state's rivers, streams, and wetlands. I think ONRWs are unique in that, unlike other clean water provisions that are really asking questions around how much pollution or degradation is acceptable in our water and what we should do to remediate those levels of contaminant, ONRWs provisions seek to protect waters that are already existing in outstanding quality in states. The value of outstanding resource waters become the standard that future actions and degradations may be measured against. So it really becomes a really powerful and important tool for protecting things like water temperature, ecosystem function, water quality, habitat, recreational values are all outstanding things that can be protected by an ONRW designation. And that becomes increasingly important as climate change becomes, the impacts of climate change on our systems and communities becomes more evident, from diminished flows to elevated water temperatures to other degradations. ONRWs are a tool that can help protect those remaining high quality rivers and streams. Protections of these waters will ensure the qualities that make them so valuable remain intact. And that is why we're here asking that the board support the staff recommendations and our partnership in moving the ONRW project forward in this triennial review. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments.
Sam, you're next. If you could unmute and you can turn on your camera if you like.
Can you all hear and see me?
Yes, thank you.
Very good. Good morning. My name is Sam Davidson. I am the Public Lands Policy Director for Trout Unlimited in California. As you may be aware, Trout Unlimited operates a salmon habitat restoration program from Lagunitas Creek in Marin County to the Mad River called the North Coast Coho Project. It's now the largest non-governmental organization managed program in the state dedicated to this purpose. So we have substantial investment in Region 1, in the Water Board's Region 1 area. And through this program, which has operated for the last 25 years, we've invested a lot of resources in repairing and improving habitat, water quality, and fish passage in the South Fork Eel watershed in particular. As you all know from the public record on the triennial review, Trout Unlimited strongly supports the designation of segments of Cedar and Elder Creeks in the South Fork Eel watershed as outstanding national resource waters. And we are committed to working with our conservation partners and the Water Board and staff to provide the requisite analysis and due diligence to facilitate this. One of the roles I play in my job is serving as the chair of the freshwater work group of a statewide coalition called the Power in Nature Coalition, which is dozens of conservation, sporting, and equitable access groups that was launched to help the state achieve its so-called 30 by 30 goals, that is protecting biodiversity, enhancing climate resilience, and improving equitable access to the outdoors by permanently protecting 30% of California's lands and waters by the year 2030. As you all may be aware, as of last year, the state has committed to its 30 by 30 goals statutorily, and we have precious little time to fulfill that mandate, only 6 short years. The California Natural Resources Agency is leading the state's efforts to achieve 30 by 30. The resource agency's Pathways to 30 by 30 report, which is the strategic plan for accomplishing 30 by 30 in California, specifically calls out the crucial need to strengthen protections for freshwater resources, as well as the biodiversity and human values associated with them. One of the tactics specifically highlighted in the Pathways report for better protecting freshwater resources is the designation of outstanding national resource waters, or outstanding waters, which has been largely underutilized as a tool for protecting freshwater resources, biodiversity, cultural values, and resource-dependent recreational opportunities. In addition, leading fish scientists such as Dr. Peter Moyle at UC Davis and Dr. Ted Grantham at UC Berkeley have determined that preserving freshwater-based biodiversity, in particular cold water fishes such as salmon and steelhead, requires rapid action, such as applying new protective designations, including outstanding waters, for the water resource areas on which their habitat depends. So I would like to emphasize that the designation of Cedar and Elder Creeks as outstanding waters is supported by the best available science and directly supports the state's commitment to larger scale and holistic action to help our landscapes, waters, and communities become more resilient to the impacts of the warming climate. In addition, this action is consistent with and supports actions described in Governor Newsom's salmon strategy released earlier this year that aims to recover and sustain the multiple native species of this iconic fish in California and the cultures and economies that are dependent on them. We all know that water is life, and cold, clean water is required for the lives of our native salmon species. Status quo thinking and practices have put many stocks of these species on the brink of extirpation in many of their native waters, including in Region 1. I'd like to leave you with the thought that we can and must do more and better utilize all the tools at our disposal toward helping to restore and sustain them. Thank you for your consideration of our petition and staff's recommendation that we designate Cedar and Elder Creek as outstanding national resource waters.
Thank you for your comments.
Stephen, you're next. You can unmute and turn on your camera if you like.
Can't find my camera to turn on.
We can hear you though.
Okay. There it is. Good morning. My name is Steve Evans. I'm the Wild Rivers Director for Cal Wild, which is a statewide conservation group focused on the protection of wildlands and waters on public lands throughout California. Today I'm going to give you a rundown on the two creeks that we think would be great candidates to consider outstanding waters designation for in the Northwest California region. In context, located in Mendocino and Humboldt counties, the South Fork Eel and its tributaries support the largest concentration of naturally reproducing anadromous fish in the region. The South Fork also flows through one of the largest continuous tracts of undeveloped coastal conifer forest remaining in California. Due to its outstanding anadromous fisheries, the South Fork is protected as a state wild and scenic river, but unfortunately this protection does not extend to its tributaries, which add to that important value. Cal Wild is part of a coalition that has proposed outstanding waters designation of two tributaries of the South Fork, Cedar Creek and its tributaries, as well as Elder Creek and its tributaries. And we chose these potential outstanding water targets because of the role they play in supporting the South Fork Eel's outstanding values. A tributary to the South Fork Eel, Cedar Creek drains federal lands in Mendocino County, managed by the Bureau of Land Management, the BLM, that is, and the Red Mountain Unit of the South Fork Eel Wilderness, which is also managed by BLM, and state lands managed by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife in the Little Red Mountain Ecological Reserve. Cedar Creek and its tributaries support at-risk populations of salmon and steelhead and contribute to the South Fork's large concentration of naturally reproducing anadromous fish. Old growth forests provide habitat for the threatened northern spotted owl and the area's unique serpentine soils, support numerous rare plants, and acts as a sponge feeding high-quality cold water to the South Fork system. The proposed outstanding waters designation applies to Cedar Creek, the North Fork Cedar Creek, and its tributaries and wetlands flowing on public lands managed by the BLM and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. The second proposal is Elder Creek and its tributaries. Elder Creek is a tributary of the South Fork Eel River. It's located in Mendocino County. It's one of the most studied streams in California. Elder Creek was designated a national natural landmark by the National Park Service in 1964, and the U.S. Geological Survey included the watershed in its nationwide network of hydrological benchmarks. The creek supports at-risk salmon and steelhead and flows through one of the largest continuous tracts of undeveloped coastal conifer forests remaining in the state. It flows from sources on Cato Peak in the South Fork Eel Wilderness through federal lands managed by the BLM and state lands managed by the University of California, Berkeley for scientific research in the Angelo Coast Range Reserve. The BLM identified Elder Creek as eligible and suitable for National Wild and Scenic River protection due to its outstanding scenery, ecology, and scientific research values. The proposed outstanding waters protection applies to Elder Creek and its tributaries and wetlands on public lands. And I think I failed to mention that Cedar Creek has also been identified by the BLM as eligible for National Wild and Scenic River protection due to its anadromous fish and ecological and rare plant values. I'm going to be part of a coalition working with the board if this work plan is approved to move forward on the outstanding water designations of these two important tributaries of South Fork Eel. And I look forward to working with the Water Board and all members of the public and interest groups in this process. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Amanda?
Hi, my name is Amanda Cooper, and I'm with California Trout. CalTrout is a statewide nonprofit conservation and restoration organization with a mission of ensuring healthy waters and resilient wild fish for a better California. We have regional offices throughout the state, including offices in both the Mount Shasta region and along the North Coast. I would like to start by thanking the board for giving me the opportunity to provide comment on the triennial review, specifically the outstanding National Resource Waters Project, included in the planning program work plan. As we have heard, ONRW designation is a powerful tool that the board can use to protect the North Coast's most pristine waters from threats both seen and unforeseen. This is important given the unknowns of climate change and a future where resiliency will be the key to thriving. Using ONRW designations aligns with California's 30 by 30 goals, the governor's California salmon strategy, and larger federal policy. There is no better way to use this tool than to start with the designations of Cedar and Elder Creeks, two vitally important cold water tributaries to the South Fork Eel River. With that in mind, CalTrout, together with our coalition partners, would like to assure the board that we are committed to working with Region 1 to make this ONRW project a success. We are offering to provide the technical support necessary for regional staff to establish an efficient and effective ONRW designation process. We are currently developing a written agreement with regional staff to formalize roles and responsibilities, with the general idea being that CalTrout and our partners will, on a voluntary basis, collect and produce technical materials that regional staff can then take up, refine, and use to make recommendations on ONRW designations. We believe that this collaboration, which builds upon our existing relationship with Region 1, will lead to a successful project. Beyond that, this collaboration and subsequent ONRW designations will lead to stronger long-term protections for North Coast streams and greater resiliency in an unknown future impacted by climate change, two things that benefit everyone. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for your pledge of cooperation. It's much appreciated.
All right, Tom, you're next. I see you have your camera on. If you could just state your name to make sure we can hear you.
Sure. I'm Tom Stokely, a consultant for Save California Salmon. You can hear me all right?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to speak in support of the priority list for the Triennial Basin Plan Review. I was pleasantly surprised to see that the updating the Trinity River Basin Plan temperature objectives was given a priority with a third of a personnel year per year, which is certainly a lot better than nothing, which is what we previously thought we were going to get. So I want to thank your staff, Michelle Fuller and Lisa Bernard, for reaching out to us and getting educated about the issues. I have a long history with Trinity River temperature objectives. I worked with your staff back in the late 80s and the early 90s to get the existing temperature objectives approved by the regional board, the state board, as well as the US EPA. I worked with Bob Clampt and Teresa Wistrom on that. As I mentioned earlier, the Trinity River is vitally important to restoration of the Klamath River and is the single largest source of cold water to prevent fish kill on the lower Klamath River. There's been an extensive effort to restore the Trinity River over the last 25 years through the Trinity River Restoration Program, but we've yet to see increased returns of Chinook salmon in particular. The temperature objectives that are in the existing basin plan were developed as a result of laboratory studies by a gentleman by the name of Terry Healy, I believe it was, who looked at survival of Chinook eggs in laboratories. And we've subsequently discovered through other studies that instead of 56 degrees Fahrenheit being necessary for adequate survival of Chinook eggs, it's actually more like 53 and a half degrees Fahrenheit. And at the time we were developing the basin plan back in 1990, we didn't think about coho salmon, which are a state and federally listed threatened species. I might add that Trinity Spring Chinook are also a state listed threatened species, but we didn't take into account the temperature needs of coho salmon, which are much colder than Chinook. And as we found out in 2021, during the third year of drought, when cold water storage in Trinity Lake was very low, we have graphs showing that at 53.6 degrees Fahrenheit, 95% of the eyed coho eggs at the Trinity River hatchery died. And because they were meeting the 56 degrees or less, but we still had losses of coho, was a clear demonstration that the temperature objectives are inadequate. The Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Association subsequently sent a 60-day notice of intent to sue letter to the Bureau of Reclamation, saying that they needed to do a new biological opinion on the Trinity River, which is ongoing right now. And in 2022, we were looking at I guess that was the third year of drought. 2021 was the year of the mortality. The Bureau again was going to meet the 56-degree requirement in Water Right Order 90-5, but PCFFA and the Yurok tribe threatened to sue, and the Bureau of Reclamation relented and bypassed the power plant at Trinity Dam to release cold water from the bottom of the reservoir. And that alleviated a second year of coho fish kills. But nonetheless, this temperature objective needs to be updated. As you know, we're now undergoing the second year of salmon fishing closures in California, and the Trinity River is a big part of that. And so we need these temperature objectives updated. I will certainly give you my commitment that I will work as hard as I can to find outside resources to help you with this basin plan amendment, because it really is vital for restoration of the Trinity and the Klamath River and restoration of our salmon fisheries. Water Right Order 90-5 is the way the basin plan temperature objective is implemented. Instead of through waste discharge requirements, and that goes back to 1989 when the state board told the Central Valley Regional Board that they would not regulate basin plan temperature objectives on the Sacramento River through water rights or through water quality and waste discharge, but instead through water rights. The Trinity River was sort of thrown in as an afterthought to Water Right Order 90-5, but the reality is not only is the 56-degree temperature requirement in 90-5 inadequate to protect threatened and non-threatened species, but it's also really not enforced at all, and there really isn't any temperature protection for the Trinity River. So in addition to updating the basin plan, we also need the state board to update Water Right Order 90-5. So thank you for your support, and I encourage you to adopt the proposed resolution. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. Deidre, anybody else?
Yes, we have two more. Jamie, you're next. We can see you, and we can just unmute and state your name to make sure we can hear you.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
Good morning, Chair Bedoya and members of the board. My name is Jamie Neary, and I'm here on behalf of Russian River Keeper. We are a local nonprofit that is focused on the protection and health of the Russian River watershed so that one day our waters are swimmable, fishable, and drinkable for all. And today, we'd like to provide comment on two different things. The first being the decision to continue to defer a TMDL program retrospective review that was first placed on the planning program work plan in 2018. This review was intended to assess the requirements of each TMDL, evaluate how those requirements have been implemented, assess existing data to identify water quality trends, and then develop recommendations to inform any future changes and updates that are necessary to the TMDL program. As far as we are aware, though, this type of review has never been completed, even though some of the action plans and implementation policies are now 20 plus years old. And without some form of regular review, the Regional Water Board has no clear data to inform these long overdue necessary updates and modifications that are necessary to ensure these plans are doing what they're supposed to, protect our water quality, and or whether additional measures are necessary and what those are. We understand that resources are limited and that trying to do as much as possible with what is available, but we would strongly encourage the board consider at least starting this review process now and would recommend that this start with the sediment and temperature implementation policies, as those are the two that we are seeing the most need for improvements within the Russian River watershed and are currently posing the most hindrance to certain improvements that are needed. My next comment is in relation to the narrative in stream flow water quality objective that has been identified as a project, as a priority project for this review period. We see this as a great important step to improving water quality within the region and ensuring that a more holistic approach is taken for management of our waters. We have long known that flow levels are strongly tied to things like temperature, pollutant concentration, flow velocity, available dissolved oxygen, and even sometimes in really dry periods, harmful algal mass. And so it is time that these relationships are given that priority, and we are really happy to see this in the work plan. On that note, though, we also would like to urge the board to ensure this project is not delayed like it has been in the past. More than a decade has passed since this board first noted the importance of an in-stream flow objective and started setting it as a priority. Yet we're still here back today, putting it back on the work plan. And so we, between climate change impacts, ongoing and future water supply strains, we just really want to make sure that this in-stream flow objective goes forward and is actually going to start meeting, help improving and address and respond to these future changes and ensure that beneficial uses are protected. And so for this reason, we respectfully request that the board establish a timeline with set milestones for this project to help ensure that it stays on track and is actually completed within this review period. We know that there is a draft staff report expected in January, and so that's a great start, and really looking forward to seeing that when it comes out in January. So those are my comments for today, and thank you again for the opportunity to provide public comment.
Thank you for your comments.
Cody, you're up next. We can see you. We can go ahead and unmute and make sure we can hear you.
Thank you. Chair, members of the board, my name is Cody Phillips. I'm a staff attorney with California Coastkeeper Alliance, and we represent a network of waterkeeper organizations throughout the state dedicated to swimmable, fishable, and drinkable waters for all. And my comment's going to echo a bit of Jamie's comment with Russian River Keeper. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. And I'd like to focus my comment on that narrative in stream flow water quality objective, which we were happy to see that the board has made a top priority during this triennial review period. We're really excited to see that the latest version of the staff report, you know, increased staff time dedicated to this issue, that there is an expected release date of January 2025 for a draft report, and that the board has additionally made this a program priority for fiscal year 2024 to 2025. In-stream flows are essential to protecting all beneficial uses, and we're in strong support of this priority. However, based on how this board has treated this specific objective in the past, we have concerns that, once again, the board may prioritize this action without any real follow-through. As noted in the comments that we submitted, this board has identified the importance of an in-stream flow water quality objective since 2007. It made it a top priority in 2014, and the 2018 Triennial Review staff report expected that this objective would be completed by 2024. Yet today, there's not even a draft timeline. And this is just a decade of prioritization without follow-through, and it's marked by a consistent failure to meet self-imposed deadlines. This is especially concerning as Water Code Section 13241 states that regional boards shall adopt water quality objectives, which in their judgment will ensure the reasonable protection of beneficial uses. This is a mandatory requirement. It uses shall language. And the board has made clear in its judgment that an in-stream flow water quality objective is necessary to protect beneficial uses. You've made it clear by prioritizing these objectives during several triennial review processes, in your TMDL action plans. It's highlighted in presentations by board staff and even in other adopted resolutions. Despite all of these findings, the board has really failed to fulfill its statutory duty to adopt this in-stream flow water quality objective for a decade, over a decade. This is pretty clear unreasonable delay and a lack of good faith compliance with the law. All that said, CCKA is happy to see that the board now seems to have concrete plans to move forward with this work within the next year to really turn this priority to a reality. And we look forward to engaging with you closely as you work toward establishing this in-stream flow water quality objective within the timeline that you set. And with that timeline in mind, respectfully, we do request that in addition to the draft staff report or in conjunction with a report that's planned to be released in 2025, the board release an expected timeline with concrete milestones for this project. And that way, you know, the public, but also yourselves, can hold yourselves accountable. If the goal is to finalize this objective by fiscal year 2026 to 2027, which is described in the work plan, then the board should have a clear idea and roadmap of how it's going to achieve that goal. And releasing that roadmap, we believe, essential to ensuring that this goal is met within this expected timeframe and not just kicked down the can during the next triennial review period. So thank you for the time and consideration, and I do look forward to engaging with you further on this issue.
Thank you very much for your comments. And Nudge. Deidre. All right, board members, I'd like to hear your comments.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. This has been an interesting introduction to being a board member on the Region 1 board. This is a three-year process. I've been on the board for 3 months, and I'll confess that while I thought of this body in its regulatory sense, I had not fully realized the extent of the planning process. And what interests me, since I'm going to be at the beginning of the next three-year process, is the involvement of the board at the early stages of this process. My understanding of the process has been laid out as that there's outreach, there's stakeholder outreach, there's tribal outreach. I didn't see any mention of a board workshop at the beginning of the process. And frankly, we're being presented with an extremely complex document with many budget decisions dependent on this board approving this triennial review. I really don't feel fully competent to comment on some of these matters, but I would just observe, as someone who's gone through many budget workshops, both at the federal, state, and local government level, that there should be some involvement of the board as the process gets underway. And it may be that there were briefings of the board while this document was being prepared. So that's a general observation from the newest board member. I'm particularly interested in the discussion on the outstanding national resource waters. It would seem that the state of California may have been behind other states in implementing policies. It says in our report that Lake Tahoe and Mono Lake are the ones designated in the state, but we're continuing to go through some process as to why bodies should be designated. And we've heard comments that these two particular creeks should be designated. And I guess my question is that there are creeks which, to my knowledge, would be somewhat similar in their topographic and geographic locations in the Russian River. So is this going to be a process that plays out over the next decade where creek by creek these are designated? Should we be looking at maybe a broader designation? But then I find out I don't really understand what the consequences are once these designations are made. Just what is the extra workload that is put on our staff? And what does this mean? Does this mean a cessation of all activities involving discharge to these two particular creeks? And so I've been a bit puzzled as to the consequences of this designation. These are my comments, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Well, to follow up on that, Valerie, could you give us an overview on that designation and what led up to the triennial review?
Well, I think I can briefly respond and then look to the board to see if there's interest in further detail from other staff. I think my brief response is that in past years of considering these designations, what staff learned was exactly what Jake was alluding to, which is that there are big questions about the implications of these designations. And so it would not be prudent to jump into looking at kind of large scale designations of many watersheds, perhaps more complex watersheds, when we really need to get our hands around what this tool is, how it can work in our region, and what the implications are of a designation. And so I think that's, the public commenters spoke much more eloquently than I could about why Cedar and Elder Creeks. But I really think one piece of that is that these are pilot watersheds where, proponents have said that there is pretty clear evidence that these merit a designation, and they're also small enough and simple enough in their land use that
it's an easier first buy. It's or a not even easier. It's a judicious first bite to take to make sure we don't take a bigger bite that has unintended consequences. And so as a pilot, considering designation, I mean, the board's action today would not designate these watersheds. It would say, go ahead and work on considering these particular watersheds as pilots to set up a process that could then be used for other watersheds in the region. But it really is this, in my mind, and others might describe it differently, but in my mind, it's this idea of a pilot project. How can we get some proof of concept in an area where we think it's, you know, feasible to do that and do so in a way that sets a process for other watersheds in our region? Does that help?
Thank you, Madam Executive Officer. Mr. Chair, the thought was that if these were designated, these two particular creeks, could that mean, for example, that all cannabis operations would be prohibited in the watershed of that particular creek? I mean, how serious do we get?
So in these, one of the reasons that these watersheds are a little bit more straightforward to approach is that they're in federal ownership. And so cannabis cultivation is already not allowed in those watersheds because cannabis can't be legally cultivated on federal lands.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Valerie, can we have a staff person give us a little more in-depth?
So, Chair Bedoya, I'm not sure exactly what you want more in depth on. So can you rephrase the question and I can dive in more? Let me ask if this is what you're hoping to hear. So are you interested in hearing a more in-depth understanding of what we think an ONRW designation might have as an implication for its, if it's...
What are the prohibitions? If these waters are designated, what would be the prohibitions? What Understood. Would a landowner in that watershed not be able to do?
Thank you for that. So I think that the one thing we know about the designation for ONRW that we're clear on is that it essentially creates a situation where this board, which normally has the authority to allow for degradation of the quality of waters in the state for the benefit of the public, right? And that would be a finding you would have to make. You could, say that a certain project is so important that it's a benefit to the public to allow for degradation of waters. That's a normal authority that this board has. In a watershed that has an ONRW, we know that that authority is then taken away. Like once you've designated an ONRW, this board cannot go in and then say there's a benefit to the public to allowing for degradation. That's the one clear thing we understand. Part of the process that we're hoping to go through when we develop this is to understand then what that specific rule plus any others that we may want to add to the designation or create as part of our basin planning process, how that might then play into, you know, an industry that wants to start up a cannabis industry in a watershed or a vineyard. Is there restrictions on what they might do based on that ONRW status? And that's why we want to focus on the process on something on a simpler watershed is we don't have a great answer to that question. And that's going to be part of the scoping of the project on public engagement on the basin planning project. It will all be a public, you know, I think all of these projects will come before this board as part of a public process that you will learn about, get input, hear from the public. And so I think that we'll learn more through that process. That's the goal. So that when, if those two watersheds are then adopted, you know, it may come back that this board thinks that it's a good idea after that to take all scenic and wild and scenic rivers in our region and designate them all as ONRWs. And maybe that's an appropriate step. Or maybe we do it creek by creek, as Board Member McKenzie mentioned. I think that those are the two different options, you know, two different sides of how it may be implemented once we understand it better. My hope and drive is that, you know, we would do it on a broader sense. I think that it would be an easier action. I mean, I think we probably have lots of water bodies that are likely to be worthy of designation. But I think to do that, we really need to understand the tool a bit better. So that's the best I can provide on that.
Thank you, Josh, for that clear explanation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Appreciate that. Let me just say that I had maybe somewhat facetiously said that we should be designating Region 1 as an ONWR, but your answer indicates that a broader approach to this question could well be contemplated by this board. And so thank you for indulging me. I appreciate that.
And you did have another question regarding the board briefing for this. It has happened over this last several years as it's being fleshed out. The triennial review is brought to the board.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I was, I'm a process sort of guy, given my whole background. And so I was curious as to at what junctures did the board have an opportunity to work with staff to comment upon the directions that we are now being asked to approve en masse in this particular agenda item. So,
well, as budget restrictions evolve, prioritization by the staff and our EO take place, and so the whole package evolves. Valerie?
I would just respond directly that we didn't have a board workshop on this earlier in the process. That hasn't been part of this regional board's practice as part of the triennial review process. And I don't believe we've heard that request from board members in past processes. And so, I think if that's of interest to this board, that's something that we should talk about early on in the process and determine if that is an appropriate and helpful and feasible step in the process next time. But that's, to a degree, this process was done, I think, in terms of board involvement, was done in the way that it's been done in the past. It was, I think there was significantly more public engagement this time around and more structure added around that. But I think, in terms of, and as Chair Bedoya said, board members were, at various points, notified that this process was going on, given updates on what was going on with the process. But if it's the interest of the board to have a more formal involvement earlier in the process, I think that's something that we could consider in the next round.
Mr. Chair, if I might just
respond. If we're considered managers, then I think it would be a very healthy thing to have a briefing as to what activities are happening.
Consider this a request from one board member that we examine the process and possibly have a workshop involvement, clearly a discussion by the full board, but I'm particularly interested over this next 3-year period that there be some more involvement of the board.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I particularly appreciate your phrasing, examine the process. I think that's a healthy way to do it and figure out what's going to make the most sense for the next process. I would note that my understanding is that even the triennial review is a 3-year period, but we don't start working on the next triennial review right now. We wait until a couple years of the process have gone by, we've achieved some of the work in the work plan, and then we start the next triennial review process officially sort of during that last year of the 3 years. So I think we'll resources will be dedicated over the next couple years to really digging in and getting some of these projects done. And then we'll be back at the triennial review specifically in a couple of years.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Executive Officer.
So, while this is my first triennial review as well, just some observations, and, you know, this kind of speaks to process and possible suggestions for in the future. I really like the idea of having more board involvement at the onset, possibly a workshop, however that works out from the legal standpoint. I'm one for being proactive and just getting stuff done and not being in perpetual planning phase. However, that said, it's interesting the number of line items that we have in the review, like priorities in the plan or in the, you know, the objectives. And I wonder, is it a case of where we get too many projects on the board and then we get perpetual extensions, or, you know, as we heard from public comment today, there was something that was introduced, you know, well over a decade ago, and nothing's really moved substantially. So is there an opportunity maybe to say, hey, here's our big list of objectives, like high priority objectives, but from that, we're just going to dedicate like the year is your top three, and we're going to focus all our efforts there. And if we can get them done, great. We'll move down the list to these other ones instead of trying to say, well, these are all the projects. We'll dedicate some people here. I don't know. It seems like we're maybe muddling down into, or it just seems maybe there's an inefficient use of resources or time, whatever you want to call it, in the current way we have it set up.
Well, that's an excellent point. And I would note that this year's proposed list is shorter than past year's proposed lists. And the draft, before it went out for public review, the draft was even shorter. And that really was with the intention of, let's commit to what we can really get done. Let's focus in on these projects and get them done. And then we, you know, heard some really compelling cases from the public. We also heard the offers of outside resources to advance these projects. And so some of the projects that look like we're, you know, and we are stretching staff into tenths of a person year. But in part, that's because we are expecting outside resources to support those projects. And that is a, you know, innovative approach that we're really excited about, you know, getting additional work done with a small portion of our, you know, the five staff we have to do this work, a small portion of their time, and then outside resources to leverage. So I think my perspective is, and I would certainly look to Lisa and Michelle and Josh if they have more to add on this, but my perspective is that this work plan list, it's a bit ambitious. It's not as ambitious as our past triennial review lists have been. And that is an attempt to strike the balance of, you know, being honest about what we can accomplish and also at least starting to work on some of these projects that many, many, many interested parties in our region have told us are very important for us to get started on.
Thank you, Madam Executive Officer. But I'm so glad you bring that point up, because I wanted to put it under the record that I really commend staff and the willingness to seek outside input. And possibly that could be something maybe built in, is where we have top internal projects, you know, say three of them. And then maybe a category down could be, these are projects that are going to be the best for outsourcing. And I really commend that out of the box thinking and hope to continue that going forward. So
I think that's an excellent suggestion on how future work plans could be organized, because that thinking is here. You know, each of those projects with outside resources has this sort of footnote that progress on this project depends on external resources, and the priority for the bulk of our staff resources is these other projects. But, you know, I think we've tried to denote that clearly, and your comments show that we could be even clearer about how we're denoting that in the work plan. Yeah. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Board Chair.
Chair Bedoya, can I add to that a little bit? Would you be okay? I just wanted to note that this, I very much support what Valerie provided, and want to note that this is the first trying to review under Catherine Carter, who's the division supervisor of that division. I don't think it's the, is it the first for Lisa as well? And the Catherine Carter, Lisa Bernard and their staff team, one of Lisa and Catherine's superpowers is organization, planning, scheduling, and keeping on task. And so I have a very positive view of where we're going to see ourselves in 3 years. We can't control every project. Some things get derailed outside of our control, but within our control, I think we're in a really good stead. You know, on the narrative flow objective concerns that we've heard from the public, I don't disagree. And I get, you know, I meet with Catherine every 2 weeks and I get briefings on that project and its status every 2 weeks. She's very much focused on it. Brian McFadden, the lead of that as our flow and riparian specialist as well. So I think the way they've designed this plan is quite different than past plans. And very much focused on what they think we can accomplish with our staff instead of a long laundry list that we're just going to try to dig through. And so my sincere belief is we're going to see a different end result in 3 years.
Thank you, Josh. And we greatly appreciate the staff work, staff time, and focus on this. And it's certainly a privilege to be working with you. Brian.
Thank you, Chairman. I think we're at a little bit of a disadvantage being new board members because there's a lot coming at you at one time and you hadn't seen it before. And I could tell, like, if you've been on here a while, you've seen these projects as they roll over from one to the next. With that said, just reading through it, I could tell how much work has gone into this and the outreach and there's a lot of good projects in here, and I think you guys did a great job, and it was presented well. And I guess being new, you have to I'm relying on staff quite a bit on how everything's allocated and which projects move to the top of the list and what's going to get done and what needs to be held off. So, with that said, I commend you for a lot of work and a lot of outreach and a lot of good projects. I hope you get them done.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Congratulations on lots of work and lots of time. Things are laid out well and they're thoughtful. And as we, in my briefing, you know, you made your points. I do want to echo Russian Riverkeeper's concern about deferring the TMDL program retrospective review. I appreciate that it's not new and shiny, but it's important. Keep going forward and not evaluating your past decisions or your past actions. If you go down the road too far, you can dig yourself a deep hole. I think I'm sorry to see that it's deferred, but I think it's very important work. It's already been kicked down the road once. We're kicking it down the road again. I don't think that's a good idea. I think we need to stop, make sure what's been done in the past, what can we learn from it, what's not working, what is working, how does one TMDL work versus another one under different circumstances. So I do want to echo Russian Riverkeeper's support of not addressing that. As far as ONRW, and you heard me the other day, I have real concerns about these two obscure creeks that have been selected. And you're asking me to elevate these to the same stature as Lake Tahoe and Mono Lake. That's pretty tough. If we were talking about the South Fork of the Eel River, one of the few undammed rivers in California, you'd have me. But I think this is a distraction. I think assigning 0.1 FTE or PY as your terminology to this project is, regardless of this, of the tremendous support that others have offered, I don't see it as a serious attempt on our part to get a significant waterway identified. I think there's an opportunity with ONRW resource waters to link other priority projects. For example, if you were going to tell me that we were considering Big Lagoon or Lake Earl or Lake Talua in Humboldt and Del Norte counties, which are truly iconic, unique water bodies. These lagoons are different than most places in the world, and particularly Lake Earl and Lake Talua have tremendous Native American cultural values, where I could see a linkage and putting together a couple of these priorities, that would make more sense to me. But to just pick two creeks out of a much bigger system, when I'm seeing, well, what's wrong with Usal Creek, which is its own system that dumps directly to the ocean, or Indian Creek on the South Fork of the Eel River that's had millions of dollars of restoration work, and you have a willing private landowner. I mean, again, I don't know where these two creeks came from. They just came out of thin air, and I'm not being dismissive of them. I'm sure they're wonderful, wonderful bodies of water, but like Jake said, there are lots of those, and this piecemeal approach just makes me not comfortable about how we're allocating our precious resources and how we just kind of want to just do a little bit of everything, as opposed to looking at how we combined efforts and maximize staff efficiency and effectiveness. So I mean, this isn't nothing new. I shared all of this with you. But I think there's other waters. I think there's other waters that would make a bigger splash, to use a water metaphor. And in my career, what's always driven me in my career is the mantra, go big or go home. If we're going to do this, I want to go big. You know, we've got some tremendous partners that want to work with us. And I think if the North Coast region is going to do this, I want to make a big splash. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Personally, I think it's important, as Valerie said, to fully understand what the implications are. And if this is our first attempt, as a pilot program, we need to develop the templates and to do a big lagoon or the waterways or the water bodies that you've just mentioned. But we have to start somewhere. And with the help and support of our other entities, other partners, and for the sake of climate change, we need to start somewhere. And that's all I'll say on that. Well, then, in that case, I'll entertain a motion to consider the adoption of Resolution R1-2024-20-0027.
Also move, Mr. Chair.
There's a second.
A second.
Pedro, would you call the vote, please?
Chair Bedoya?
Aye.
Vice Chair Giusti?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to stand on principle. No.
Board Member Hart?
Aye.
Board Member Sundberg?
Aye.
Board Member McKenzie?
Aye.
Thank you. Let me read this. The Regional Water Board, in fulfillment of the requirements described in Clean Water Act Sections 303C, D, and E and in Section 13240, Division 7 of the California Water Code, hereby approves the 2023 triennial review of the Water Quality Control Plan for the North Coast region. Thank you. All right, we'll take a break. Your attention, please. We're coming back to order. With what remains in the afternoon, we're going to cover information items 8, 9, and 10. Valerie, you did number 9 yesterday? Okay, very good. So we will hear from Valerie on regional board program priorities for fiscal year 2024-2025.
Hey. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. This is a nice pairing with the last item because the last item was speaking to a work plan for one unit of five staff in our organization with some other staff contributing to the work, of course. This item is speaking to the work of all of our programs in the office over the next fiscal year. So it is inclusive of triennial review work and a whole lot more. So in this presentation, I will start with a little grounding in our organization's mission and vision, speak briefly to the purpose of work planning and priority setting. I'll speak to the new format that we're using to present this information and why we've made that change. And then I will go through highlights from each of our organization's programs and then see if you all have any questions and comments or if members of the public have any comments to make. So we share a mission with the entire Water Board's family, and that mission is to preserve, enhance, and restore the quality and beneficial uses of our state's waters for the benefit of present and future generations. Our region has developed its own vision, and Matt always describes this as a pyramid, and so I decided to put it on a pyramid, even though the words don't fit very well. Our vision is healthy watersheds, effective regulation, and strong partnerships. And the reason it's a pyramid is that the items on the top are not possible without strong partnerships, and that really describes the approach of our region to doing our work is always a foundation of strong partnerships, both with the regulated community and with other interested communities. And that forms the foundation for our regulation and our striving for healthy watersheds throughout our region. In pursuit of that mission and vision, for the last 6 years, this is our seventh year in this process, regional board staff have conducted a process of work planning and setting priorities for the year. And the purpose of this for staff is to, consciously and thoughtfully identify priorities, how we'll prioritize our limited resources, assess the resources that are available, and make sure that our priorities match what we can reasonably accomplish with those resources. Set expectations among staff for the work that is to be accomplished and what staff are to be prioritizing, and then track progress over time and make course corrections, be able to look back at this throughout the year and assess whether we're meeting our priorities, and if we're not, what we need to do to either do that or adjust priorities if something really significant has come up where we need to adjust. For the board and the public, this process serves to provide some transparency and accountability so that we're sharing with board and public what we plan to accomplish, what we'll be working on, and also to manage expectations of, the universe of work that we are planning to accomplish. And by saying what we're planning to accomplish, it's also, we can note what's not on that list, what's not prioritized for this year. So I mentioned we've been doing this process. This is our seventh year doing this work planning process within our region. And this year, we decided to go with a new web-based format. In the past, these work plans have been paper documents, and then as things move to a more electronic world, PDF documents. Last year's work plans were a total of 140 pages of material, which constituted an impressive body of work on the part of staff, but also constituted a lot of material for folks to wade through if they were trying to find a specific piece of information. And so we thought about this year what we could do to make that information easier for people to find what they're looking for. And so this doesn't show up as well as I would have hoped on this slide, but there's a link to it. There's a link in your agenda package. And basically, we put all of our program priorities on one web page with collapsible sections so that folks can easily scroll through, see our different programs, and expand each section. So this is what happens if you click on one of those little arrows on the right. It expands the program and you get some contact information. You get web links for where to find additional information. You get a brief overview and purpose of that program. And then you get some bullet point priorities for the fiscal year. We in the past, we've organized our work plans by division. Divisions are an organizational unit within our org chart. And so we've organized it that way because that is kind of it's how our staff are organized. It's what makes sense to us internally. With this change of trying to make it easier for other folks to find the information, we, instead of doing it based on how we organize our staff, we organize the information more based on what we thought might be intuitive for folks if they were looking for something. So we came up with categories, including strategic initiatives, planning, monitoring, and assessment programs, permitting programs. And then we had a few that didn't fit any of those categories, and we just called them other. So I will now walk through highlights from each of our programs. And again, these are just highlights, not comprehensive of all the work that's occurring. It's more comprehensive on that program priorities page. But I just wanted to provide some kind of key points. So within strategic initiatives, we have our racial equity action plan, which is underway. Last February, our board adopted a racial equity resolution, which set in motion the process of developing a specific action plan. And so what that team is conducting this fiscal year is continuing our internal and external engagement on that plan, actually drafting the plan, and then conducting a regional board workshop and later a final presentation of the Racial Equity Action Plan. Climate resilience initiatives led by our climate specialist, Matt St. John. Some of the areas that Matt's work is focused on in the coming year include efforts on Humboldt Bay, where sea level rise is fast and furious. He is working on a shoreline adaptation atlas subject to grant funding that we're still waiting for word on, and also working to coordinate with partners and provide support for the development of an offshore wind port on Humboldt Bay. He also is the staff lead on the Outstanding National Resource Waters Project. So he'll be coordinating with those outside partners that spoke to you today and have committed their support to the project. And then he also provides support to both regional board and state board projects and programs, really helping to integrate climate resilience issues and concerns into those other projects and programs. Watershed stewardship in Humboldt Bay. Our Humboldt Bay watershed steward is Elizabeth Pope. She has a number of efforts going on in the Elk River, bioassessment monitoring, convening coordinated monitoring, and then also managing a contract with Humboldt County to do an engineering study to look at options for dealing with flooding issues on Elk River Road. In the greater Humboldt Bay, she is working with Matt and other staff, also in support of those two projects that I just described in Humboldt Bay. Watershed stewardship in the Scott and Shasta Rivers. Our watershed steward there is Eli Scott, and he is working to implement the TMDL and existing waivers while developing new waste discharge requirements. He's not alone in developing new waste discharge requirements. He has a whole staff team, but he is certainly the expert and lead on that project. He is also managing some monitoring work in the Scott River and engaging with state board on their flow efforts in those two watersheds. Our restoration program is led by restoration specialist Jake Shannon. He broadly does a lot of work with partners to implement statewide permit programs that are relevant to restoration and where we have a project enrollments for restoration projects in our region. A couple of highlights of the big projects that he continues to support include tribal restoration after wildfire in the Klamath River watershed and potentially other watersheds, and also Klamath Dam removal and restoration support. Flow and Riparian Protection. That specialist is Brian McFadden. And the primary focus of his work this coming year is the narrative flow objective that was part of the triennial review. He also is one of the heavy hitters providing support for the Scott and Shasta waste discharge requirements, and then also support to other regional and state board projects and programs that are specifically support to include flow and riparian protection concerns. On to our next program category, planning, monitoring, and assessment. Basin planning, you just saw the 3 years of work plan. So I'm not going to go into those projects other than to highlight you've seen that team is working on quite a few high profile basin planning projects starting in the next year. Our total maximum daily load program, these were also listed in triennial review, but I felt like I would still point out which TMDLs were part of that triennial review. Those include the Russian River Pathogen TMDL, Coastal Pathogens Project, Wallala River Sediment TMDL, and then a TMDL for sediment, phosphorus, nitrogen, and temperature in the Laguna de Santa Rosa watershed. Our integrated report program is the program that works with State Board to develop the 303D, 305B integrated report. And that is a process that is now housed at State Board. But we have dedicated staff here in the region who do a lot of heavy lifting to support that project in terms of analysis and outreach and engagement on that project. So Mary's work this year will include supporting bringing that 2026 integrated report to the point where it's considered and adopted by the State Water Board. Continuing with planning, monitoring, and assessment, we have our surface water ambient monitoring program, lovingly referred to as SWAMP. Rich is juggling a lot of different things in that program, but I wanted to highlight this program involves a lot of statewide and interagency collaboration. SWAMP is a statewide program with staff in each region. Planned for this year is also the development of a long-term monitoring framework. And back in, I want to say April, but I didn't write it down, there was an executive officer's report article. It was not this April, it was last year. There was an EO report article describing kind of where we've been, where we are, and where we're going with SWAMP. And that article kind of previewed this concept of developing a strategic framework for monitoring in our region moving forward. So that's a really exciting project. And then another thing I wanted to highlight is that this SWAMP program also provides training support for our field staff and other programs that need to do sampling or monitoring as part of their work. And so this program's providing that support to numerous programs in our region. Freshwater harmful algal bloom program. This one also has a long list of activities, but those that I'm highlighting are that we continue to offer partner trainings to partners throughout the region that are conducting or want to conduct FHAB monitoring and response. We do work on pre-holiday assessments in key locations in our region, looking at FHAB conditions before holidays where there's a lot of aquatic recreation. We do emergency incident monitoring response, and this program as well, lots of statewide and partner coordination. Permitting programs, we have a lot of these, so we've got a few slides on this one. And these programs are where we get more into numeric performance targets, where a lot of the other programs, the targets are more qualitative. Many of our permitting programs are required to set numeric targets and report on those targets each year. And so you'll see more numbers in the permitting section. Our forest activities program plans to review or inspect 175 projects. Bring the federal lands permit to this board for adoption, continue to coordinate with CAL FIRE and Board of Forestry to improve regulation and oversight of post-fire salvage operations, and also implement a new statewide electrical utility order that is currently going through the process for State Board consideration. And once that's in place, our staff will implement the order in our region. Our surface water protection program focuses on issuing 401 water quality certifications or waste discharge requirements for projects that might impact waters of the state or waters of the U.S. And so we see a large volume of ongoing project applications for those types of coverages. But some highlights of the big ones that this team are working on are, and there's some repetition here of what our programs are working on. Some of these really big projects going on in our region have a lot of different programs working on them. So you see, again, Klamath Dam removal and restoration, the Humboldt Bay Wind Port, and then that implementing the statewide electrical utility order will be a partnership between our forest activities program and our surface water protection program. Cannabis cultivation, there's always a lot going on in this program. I'm pleased to note that we are optimistic that when the state budget is finalized for the next fiscal year, we're optimistic that will include some new staff positions so that this program can move from its current kind of skeleton crew to a little bit more robust staffing to meet all of the various demands of the program. This program continues to focus on inspecting illegal cultivation sites. We also have 23 existing cleanup and abatement orders on cannabis sites that our staff are going to focus this year on following up on those, assessing the status of compliance, and seeing what else needs to happen to assure cleanup at those sites. Lots of interagency coordination in this program. Our region also is a leader in developing technology tools to improve our ability to understand and regulate this land use. And so that's certainly to the benefit of our region and also to the benefit of the program statewide. Numbers wise, this program is planning 4 formal enforcement actions. That's the target number. 40 inspections, again, focused on illegal sites. Processing 30 enrollment applications in the statewide cannabis order and participating in at least 1 outreach event. Here's some more of our agricultural permitting programs. So our dairy program has a huge emphasis on education and outreach. This program is planning to conduct 24 compliance inspections. Also assist producers to make sure that they are ready to comply with the groundwater monitoring deadlines that are coming up in that permit. Administering a contract with UC Cooperative Extension related to, I believe, nutrient management on pasture-based dairies, which is the predominant type of dairies in our region. And then finally, just a huge emphasis on partnerships in this program, working with ag-serving organizations that assist our dairies in protecting water quality and complying with our permit. The vineyard program plans this year include bringing the final proposed order to the board. If and when that order is adopted, our staff would be working with partners to establish third parties to help implement that order, conducting public outreach so that folks that are subject to the order are aware of it and its requirements, and then developing the framework for implementation of that order, things like, you know, basics like forms, functional forms that people would use to do their enrollment and reporting and other aspects like that to have everything ready to go when the enrollment deadlines start coming up. Our Lily Bulb program, our staff are planning to conduct annual inspections at Lily Bulb operations, continue convening the watershed stewardship team, completing a water quality monitoring project that our staff have been leading in the Smith River Plain, and developing an order for a regulatory order, waste discharge requirements for Lily Bulb cultivation. And some of the activities for order development include tribal consultation, convening an advisory group, developing an administrative draft, and conducting CEQA scoping. And I'll pause.
Yeah, just a point of clarification. Well, both under the vineyard and the Lily Bulb, I see David's name. Hi. Is it Chris Watt? Is he no longer working on the vineyards?
Oh, Chris is. These are the kind of lead contact staff.
Okay.
So Josh, Brenna, and Ben all work in David's unit, and David is their supervisor.
Okay. All right.
But we have Well, the ones that are new order development, Vineyard and Lily Bulb, we have a team approach, and Chris is very much part of both of those teams.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm just not glad David's involved too, but I didn't know if that was a major shift.
And generally speaking, Chris Watt supports the entire office in groundwater related matters. So he participates in a number of teams within our office.
Thanks, Claudia. And thanks for your question. Okay, this is the last slide on permitting programs. We have two distinct NPDES programs, but I combined them into one for slide space. So we have a wastewater program and a stormwater program. Their plans this year include issuing new permits. So in stormwater, updating the phase one municipal separate storm sewer system permit. I think the first element of that will be some edits to particular sections of that permit, looking more long-term at a larger scale update to that permit. Our wastewater program is looking at issuing new or updated permits to 8 wastewater facilities, and also developing a new general order for minor municipal wastewater facilities, so that instead of having to have those facilities and the regional board work on individual permits, folks could actually enroll in a general permit with some individualized requirements, so that the permit requirements still suit each facility and the water quality threats and the needs of the facility. Inspection-wise, our stormwater program is looking at conducting 46 construction stormwater inspections, 58 industrial stormwater inspections. The wastewater program is planning to conduct 8 wastewater inspections, 2 sanitary sewer inspections, and 1 pretreatment inspection. This program also carries a heavy enforcement workload. Waste discharge to land. Some of the highlights include implementing the statewide winery general order, working with enrollments in that order within our region, supporting the Russian River pathogen TMDL development as that relates to on-site wastewater treatment systems, conducting advocacy and support ongoing for water recycling in our region, which I know is an issue of interest to some of our board members. And targets include conducting 28 inspections, 26 enrollments in general permits, including the winery general order, but not limited to that, 180 reviews of self-monitoring reports, and developing 2 individual waste discharge requirements permits. This program also has a focus on enforcement. Finally, our land disposal permitting program is really looking to increase efforts related to compliance assessment, tracking, and enforcement. Notably, this permit is, or this program, continually works on managing growth of the Sonoma County Central Waste Disposal Site, because that's currently the only waste disposal site in our region that is accepting new waste. And targets include revising 1 waste discharge requirement permit, conducting 8 inspections, and 8 self-monitoring report reviews. So that was permitting. I think this is our last slide. The other category has a few programs in it. So our site cleanups program is this year looking to reduce their response time when they receive data about vapor intrusion or water supply data. They are going to continue focusing on supporting brownfield redevelopment. They're going to start a new process of issuing letters annually to open cleanup sites where they haven't had interaction with that site during the year, just as a way to kind of renew the relationship and remind folks of the requirements that they still have regarded to site cleanup and monitoring. They will continue to update GeoTracker, which is a system where the public can get information about contaminated sites. So making sure that the information on that site is current so that folks can understand what's going on at those sites in their neighborhoods. Always working towards site closures of contaminated sites. And then lastly, I wanted to highlight something that the board has heard from the public about, which is working with local government to make sure that systems are tight to prevent inadvertently approving housing development on contamination plumes that could then pose a health risk to residents at those housing sites. Enforcement. Our targets for this program include within 18 months, bringing 80% of Class A priority violations to formal enforcement, and also within 18 months, imposing mandatory minimum penalties for 80% of the violations that are subject to mandatory minimum penalties. That's a specific type of violation that's subject to those. Annually updating and providing an update to the board about our enforcement priorities in the region. In addition to those targets above, working on bigger, complex, long-term enforcement cases and providing support for those. This program also coordinates complaint response organization-wide. And so if a member of the public reaches out to our organization with a complaint about a water quality issue, this program team makes sure that complaint gets to the right people to be responded to and make sure that we're on top of tracking those responses. And then another focus of this program this year, it's a small but mighty group of staff, is pursuing delinquent liabilities. So if this board has imposed a monetary penalty and that hasn't been paid on time, using tools like collections and monetary judgments, losing track of the term. Am I right? Yes. Thank you. And potentially imposing liens on properties. So, making sure that orders that are issued by the board are followed through on. Lastly, our grants and funding program does an ongoing effort to cultivate potential grant projects in our program that could benefit water quality and beneficial uses. And so that is, coordinating with organizations that could be project proponents, providing support for good projects if they're seeking funding from other agencies, connecting them with funding opportunities that we're aware of. We also manage the 319H grant program within our region. That's a statewide grant program, so lots of statewide collaboration. Our staff during the year will set our regional preferences for what types of projects should be funded where in our region. They will work with the statewide team to develop grant guidelines for the annual program. They will assist applicants who are interested in applying for the funding in our region. They will work with that statewide team to select projects for funding throughout the state. And then where projects are funded in our region, they will develop and manage grant agreements for those projects. So that was a bit of a whirlwind, but there are some highlights. And I really welcome your questions and comments, either about the highlights I noted or if there's something else you saw in the priorities that I didn't speak to that caught your eye.
Thank you, Madam Executive Officer. What are the challenges? What are you seeing as being a challenge with the budget cuts that are looming or that have happened? Are you well staffed? Do you have enough people to carry all this work out? What challenges do you see coming down the road?
Well, to be candid, I don't think we ever have enough staff to fully carry out all of the work that we could and should and want to be doing to fulfill our mandate in the region. And that condition is ubiquitous across the water boards. It's hard to get new positions. And so we are pretty constantly advocating for new positions. The current state of the budget, the current draft does include some new positions for our region, which is, I mentioned we are hopeful that when the budget's finalized that we'll receive some new positions for cannabis. And a few others for other programs, and so that's great. And it's a tough budget year, so we have not received specific direction about what areas of our budget might need to be cut in the coming fiscal year. That is, we're still awaiting that direction. We have heard that furloughs are not on the table currently in the current thinking of the budget. And so that's that's good news. You know, that's a tough blow to have an already short-staffed organization, have staff not be able to work full-time. And so we don't anticipate that that's coming, but we're awaiting specific direction about anything we might need to do to further cut our budget, and we'll keep the board posted on that.
On certain projects where expertise is found in other regions, have the other regions been cooperative with sharing their resources, their specialists, say, for example, on a certain topic that we may not have the resources within our region?
Want to speak to that?
I can speak a little bit on that. So yeah, we have a number of projects where we'll reach out to either the Office of Enforcement or also the Division of Water Rights at the State Water Board, and they have agreed to assist us, in particular with the Scott and Shasta waivers. We got concurrence from the State Water Board to provide us with a staff person to assist us in developing that order and providing their expertise. And as I mentioned earlier, too, the Office of Enforcement provides some support to us as well in developing cases from time to time.
There's also a lot of information sharing among the water boards via program-specific roundtables where staff come together to, and I haven't ever participated in a roundtable, so Josh or Claudia might want to speak more to that process, but I know it exists and it's helpful.
Yeah, that's that. I was going to highlight that too, so thanks, Valerie. There are, I don't remember how many roundtables there are now, over 20, I think, but there's a lot. And they're program specific. They're all statewide, and the different staff at different regions, you know, and it might be different levels in that that roundtable. They'll come together periodically to discuss issues that affect that program statewide. I wouldn't say that we have a lot of sharing of resources between the regions, which is different than kind of what was spoken about. Because I think we're all short-staffed and a lot of our issues are different region to region. But there is a lot of coordination and support for, you know, how we might implement something or discussing issues in those roundtable venues. And that's often kind of what they'll talk about. They'll have a topic and they'll discuss how it might play out in different regions or how that, you know, that issue is being addressed in one place that might be assistance in another and things like that. But like actual resource sharing between the regions, I think is more rare.
I also wanted to add that we have in previous years, and I plan to do so in the future, requested USCPA assistance. And they have assisted us in conducting stormwater inspections within our region in the past. And we plan on doing the same moving forward.
Thank you. Thank you for the explanation. I really appreciate it. Board members, any questions or comments?
Honorable Chair, question about the priorities that are established here. Are they reviewed by the state board, by Sacramento? Is there an oversight mechanism from the state board regarding what you are projecting in terms of number of enforcement inspections, this type of thing?
So some elements of what we've presented as program priorities, some of most of those numeric targets, there is an interaction with state board on those, both a communication about the appropriateness of the targets that we set for the coming year. And then at the end of the fiscal year, when we have all the data on how we performed on our targets, there's communication with state board about our performance on that. The more qualitative aspects, not as much. This the entirety of this priority setting process is something that we've we've chosen to do as a region and not something that anyone else has required of us. It's really the subset that's the numeric targets is the thing that has requirements and oversight from State Board.
Okay. And is there a sort of, do you have a annual sit down with the State Board's executive officer?
Our sit down related to performance targets is with the chief deputy director, who oversees the Division of Water Quality at State Board. And that's kind of the, there will be other folks involved, but that's our primary communication when it comes to performance targets is the chief deputy director.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We do sit down with the State Board executive officer. It's just not on performance targets.
Oh, sorry about that. Which leads us to item number 10, board member requests for future agenda items and other items of interest. Board members, do you have any interesting topics you'd like to bring up as a future agenda item?
I don't know if it's interesting, but is it possible within the next few board meetings if we could get an update, status update on the Shasta TMDLs, how that's going, Shasta-Scott, excuse me? Is there any way we can do that?
Edge requirements,
yep,
that are under development?
Even if it's a short, you know, presentation, it doesn't need to be some long drawn out thing, but just an update so it's at the forefront.
Yes, I'm trying to remember the timeline. I believe we have existing plans to give the board an update, and I'm not sure if it's in the next few meetings or if it's the beginning of 2025, but it's soon is the either the next few meetings or maybe the beginning of the next calendar year. So I think we have a written article planned, but
if we could have it in the next few meetings, that would be great, but that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, every meeting we ask this question. And so somewhere there's a list of past requests that we've been made. And at the discretion of the EO, I would suggest that, you know, when we have a light meeting like we had this time, if you could find the list, maybe you could fill one of those in and use one of those past agenda items.
Yes.
if it's not too onerous.
Certainly. I do keep a list, and this meeting I filled it in with the let's do field tours request.
That was perfect.
But now I note that we would have had space for another info item. It was hard to know, but sure. I'll take your encouragement to pull more things.
My only point is that
list.
You know, suggestions made in the past had relevance then, they have relevance
yes.
now. So you could use those as fillers if you need to sometimes.
Yes. And I do keep a running list, and I look at it frequently. So
perfect. Thank you.
I could perhaps do better at taking action on that list, but I want you to know I keep track of the requests, and I'm looking for places to plug them in.
Mr. Honorable Chair, we're going to be up in Humboldt County in August, I believe. Field trip. We had a field trip yesterday in our part of the world down here, and I was just wondering if there would be any opportunities during the board meeting to visit a site in the Eureka area. There's a number of projects that have been mentioned, and certainly sea level rise in the Humboldt Bay area is a critical issue. Just a thought.
Yeah. Funny you should mention that. I was thinking about that yesterday after our tour, and our August agenda is a little hairy to fit in a tour. It could be if we found something that could be plugged in the day before and board members were available, that might be an option. So we'll be thinking about the feasibility of that, but I'm also trying to protect that meeting a little bit to make sure we have adequate time for the board to deliberate about everything that you'll need to be discussing in the meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anything else?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. So the next meeting will be at 9 a.m. Thursday, August 15th, 2024, and 9 a.m. Friday, August 16th, 2024, at the Eureka City Hall City Council Chambers, 531 K Street, room 208, Eureka, California. With that, meeting is adjourned. Thank you.